Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
When you talk about Lamar Jackson, you're treading into unknown waters.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
What if Lamar Jackson had shown up at this owner's meeting and was shaking hands and walked straight up to Arthur Blank in a hallway?
Earlier on the show, USC wide receiver Jordan Addison. Coming up, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. Co-creator, writer, and actor from Ted Lasso, Brendan Hunt. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. Great chat with the young man, Jordan Addison, from University of Southern California by way of the Pittsburgh football program and the Mid-Atlantic, one of the top wide receivers available in this year's draft. It's just great chatting with him. Yeah. The man who plays Coach Beard on the hit show Ted Lasso on Apple TV, on Apple TV Plus. He's joining us in studio hour number three. How much fun will this be? I look forward to meeting him. I think I Zoomed with him back in the day.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He's coming here. Jason Sudeikis is slated to be here Monday.
How about that?
So our Believe sign that's hanging up behind Chris Brockman that Sean Payton signed when he was here during the Super Bowl, because he was, if I'm not mistaken, on his retirement press conference, he gave out biscuits.
Gave out biscuits to all the
So we had him sign reporters. The Believe sign, and we'll get both top coaches of AFC Richmond, hopefully signing that by the end of our show Monday. Good times. Joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show to kick off hour number two, we saw him at the NFL owners meeting, not just because I follow him on Twitter and everything else that he does for Sports Illustrated, but when we had the soundbite of Matt LaFleur, we saw him lurking behind. He's a LaFleur lurker. He's Albert Breer back here on the Rich Eisen Show. We saw you lurking, Albert. We saw you lurking.
Did I look as awkward as Darlington did with his coffee cup there?
Oh, hold on a minute.
That was creepy.
I stand corrected. It was Robert Saleh. You lurked behind Saleh. You're a Saleh lurker.
Okay. Because I think it was Darlington who went behind LaFleur with the he said that he thought he looked like a character from The Office, which I thought was pretty accurate.
Albert, you've been at these meetings for a long time. And, you know, the idea was coaches are sitting at a breakfast table, and now they're just sitting at tables, and now the tables aren't large enough. This thing is getting huger and huger because there's always news post-free agency or post, you know, combine, and we haven't heard from these guys since the combine, and it's just getting huger and bigger. It's unbelievable, this event.
Yeah, it's like everything else.
Right?
Right. Like, I mean, I can remember going to the Senior Bowl. You know, it was 15 years ago, probably the first time I went, and I was like, "This is great. There are no reporters here." You know what I mean? Like, and now I think Jim Nagy could probably verify the number, but they're probably credentialing like 200-300 people for the practices. You know,
it's crazy.
It's just amazing the way this stuff has grown. And you know, I was actually reading our mutual friend Tom Curran, his story on Belichick the other day, and I thought he put it well. He was like, "These have sort of become like." You know, almost de facto state of the union addresses for the coaches and the owners, you know, that this is sort of, you know, now you're a couple, you know, months separated from the season and, for most of the teams anyway. And, you got a little ways to go, you know, obviously before OTAs get ramped up, and it's just sort of every single team. And that's why the beat reporters all go. Every single team has this like little de facto state of the union address from its coach, and for some teams from the owner and the general manager as well. And so that's, I think, one reason why we get so much information coming out of this. It just sort of feels like it's starting to set the table for the next year.
Well, then let's jump into some of the stories that came out of this owner's meeting and narratives coming out of the owner's meeting, starting with Belichick. Let's start there. There was a topic bar that caused me to stop, walk into my desk today on ESPN on their Get Up program, where it's like, has Belichick lost a step? You know, Brockman is sitting here, you know, frequently. You believe that Bill is coaching for his job this year.
I think Bob Kraft has made that clear.
What do you think, Albert? Is that really the case? in New England?
I mean, I think this is a critical year for the organization. And I don't know whether or not, you know, Bob Kraft would have the stomach to press the button on that and actually fire Bill Belichick. But, you know, I think it's pretty clear, like, just hearing those two guys talk, they're not in lockstep the way they used to be. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, you sort of, it almost felt like to a degree there were salvos going back and forth. You know, like, I mean, that was a bomb that Robert Kraft dropped on Lamar Jackson, you know, and, you know, he put that on the record and that, you know, left that at Bill's feet, you know, and then, you know, Bill basically saying, like, check my resume when, you know, he's asked why fans should be, which should be optimistic about 2023, despite the fact they're coming off, like, by far the worst four-year stretch of his almost 2.5 decades in New England. You know, you can kind of see, like, a little bit of the disconnect there. And this is a critical year, too, because they've missed the playoffs in 2 of the last 3 years. They've had under 500 records the last 2 of the last 3 years. That's the first time, I believe that might be the first time that's happened in Kraft's ownership, you know, since he bought the team. You know, and then on top of that, like, you know, you're talking about having a major decision with your quarterback coming after this year, in that they'll at the very least have to make a decision on Mac Jones's fifth year option after this year, presuming Mac Jones is the quarterback in 2023. And so, like, this is shaping up as, like, a pretty massive year for the franchise in general, and as for the direction of the franchise. And if it doesn't go the way that Bill Belichick's planning for it to go, you certainly could see where bigger questions are going to be asked. And, again, I don't know whether or not, you know, like, you know, Robert would have the stomach to fire the greatest coach in the history of the game. But it certainly feels like things are not close to being in the same place they were 5 years ago.
Especially since, if we're, you know, on the Lamar subject with the Patriots, I mean, Brady was there for a hometown discount, you know, season after hometown discount season. I mean, we looked it up. What the number of millions that Brady made in his tenure with the Patriots?
About 220.
Yeah, I mean, and it would maybe cost that much in guaranteed dollars to land Lamar Jackson. It doesn't strike me as Kraft would ever want to cut a check for a single player of that size, regardless of the position. It just doesn't seem to make sense organizationally, regardless of what Meek Mill may have delivered a message to or for Albert.
Here's the issue, though, like, Rich, if I, you know, like, when I look at it, it sort of feels like the Patriots are built like a Tom Brady Patriot team would be built. You know what I mean? Like, where, like, they didn't need to be outstanding in every spot when Brady was the quarterback. Brady would come in and kind of save the day with some things. You know what I mean? Like, so that's why you didn't need to have Randy Moss on every team Brady played for. As long as you were balanced and you could send five guys into the route, trust those five guys, and have five competent linemen in front of the quarterback, Brady would sort of figure out the rest. And, you know, in the years they were better in those spots, then Brady would elevate and the teams would be incredible, you know? And now it feels like they've got good skill position players. Do they have somebody who, when they break the huddle, the defensive coordinator is going to be sweating bullets over? Probably not, right? And I would say one, if not both, of their tackle positions are still an issue going into the draft. So, like, it kind of feels like a team is built for Tom Brady to come in the shape of the day. They don't have Brady anymore. And so what would be one way where you could create something on your offense that, you know, would change the dynamic? Oh, Lamar Jackson would be one way to do it. You know, if you're talking about breaking the huddle and having a guy that the defensive coordinators have nightmares over, that would be one way to do it, is to make that guy the quarterback, you know? But yeah, I think it's something that would be outside the box of what they've done from a financial standpoint. Then again, if you want to look at the other side of it, and I'll bring up the Moss example again, if you look at why Bill Belichick went and got Randy Moss, why he signed Tim Tebow, you know, at one point, and why he's held Lawrence Taylor in the highest regard, you know, there are so many cases where there's a unique player who brings something different to the table that can make the Patriots more difficult to prepare for, and that can give Bill an edge over other coaches, and not just on sheer talent, but because he's bringing in somebody who just changes the dynamic completely. And in that way, Lamar Jackson would very much fit the bill. I don't think they're going to do it, but, like, I do think there's reason to believe that Bill Belichick would be intrigued by the idea.
The MMQB's Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk Lamar writ large, hitting send just as John Harbaugh sits down to talk to the media on a tweet saying, I, by the way, asked for a trade on March 2nd. And then the annual meeting wraps up as he tweets about how he wasn't jaking his injury. If he was, then why was he trying so hard between weeks 1 and 12? He's putting it out there. He's putting a lot of messages out there.
Yep.
And part of the subtext for me, Albert, is that if he had offer sheets on the table or in an offer sheet on the table, he wouldn't be doing that. Does he have an offer sheet from anybody, do you think?
No, and I think, like, my feeling right now is if an offer sheet was going to come before the draft, it would have come by now. So we could start with, like, that first piece, which is, what I thought was, like, a pretty strategic, savvy way of going about that. We assume it was intentional. It couldn't have been an accident that he has tweet, his send on that tweet, like whatever it was, 3 minutes into John Harbaugh's media session. I think part of that might be a salvo with the way the general public has seen this. Like, I think because he doesn't have an agent, like, people are looking at it and saying, well, like, is this guy just wandering around aimlessly, no idea what he's doing? This was kind of like, all right, well, if you want to see if I can be cold and cunning and smart and savvy about this, watch what I'm about to do. And he did that. So, like, I think that's part of it, And then just as far as where this thing goes, the reason I bring up the draft, Rich, is because I think that there could be teams in the top 10, a team or teams in the top 10, that might not be wild about this quarterback class, right? And might think to themselves, if Young and Stroud go 1 and 2, we really don't feel comfortable taking one of the guys that's left, at 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10. So why don't we wait until after the draft to see what we're going to do, and maybe we make a run at Lamar Jackson and then spend our top 10 pick on a Will Anderson or a Tyree Wilson or a Jalen Carter or whoever else, right? And then when we get past the draft, instead of having to potentially sacrifice the 4th pick or the 7th pick or the 10th pick for Lamar Jackson, now we're talking about picks in 24 and 25. And we believe that our pick is going to be, say, in the mid-20s with Lamar Jackson as our quarterback. So I think for some of these teams, getting past the draft and then not having to give up one of this year's picks could change the dynamic. As for where things stand with the Ravens, I think the problem right now is, I think because Lamar's waited 5 years, he wants to win on every front. And, like, I respect him wanting to do that. Like, generally, it's tough to get an NFL team to agree to that. So you want to win on term, you want to win on guarantees, you want to win on the money. Like, he wants to win on every front. And right now, at this point, the Ravens haven't been willing to go the distance on that. I do think, like, that there's a compromise here in some sort of 3-year fully guaranteed deal. But I think it's going to take some compromise on Lamar's part to get there. And I will say that Lamar, I think right now, is standing on principle. I don't think this has anything to do with greed. So I think it's pretty unpredictable how he's going to handle the rest of this and whether or not he'll really want to seek a middle ground with the Ravens and where they're at.
Albert Breer, a few minutes left with our Sports Illustrated friend here on the Rich Eisen Show. Walking around the owners' meeting, the sense you got about what the holdup is between the Jets and the Packers for the Aaron Rodgers trade, we all know, they all know, is going to happen. What is the holdup?
You want me to give you some good news, Rich?
Sure.
I don't think this thing's in nearly as bad a place as everybody thinks.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, is there problems between Rodgers and the Packers? Yes. That exists. But there are some incredibly tight relationships between the two teams, right? So, like, Joe Douglas and Brian Gutekunst, the two general managers, spent a lot of time together as road scouts. They've got a great rapport. Mm-hmm. The two head coaches, Matt LaFleur and Robert Saleh, are, like, quite literally best friends, And then you've got, like, the two owner, well, the owner and the de facto owner, I guess, and Woody Johnson and Mark Murphy. And both those guys were involved in the Brett Favre trade in 2008. So they have experience working together in this sort of thing. So I think this thing's in a better place than people think. Might it happen on draft day? Yeah. I don't think it's out of the question it happens this week, you know? So, like, I think, like, there is definitely a deal to be done. I think progress has been made. And, you know, I think this is about getting sign-off from, like, every level of each organization. But I think, like, this thing is in a good place now. And I think there's, you know, a good chance that Aaron Rodgers is a Jet relatively soon. You know, certainly before the draft, I'd say probably before OTAs start, and maybe even at some point over the next few days.
Well, to me, okay. Because to me, it's got to happen before the draft. I mean, why would the Packers not take draft choices now? I wouldn't understand that.
Especially, you know what, Rich, especially if it is in a good place, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, especially if Gutekunst and Douglas have made progress. I mean, but the Jets want to have it done too. You know what I mean?
Everybody does. And it's going to have to happen, you know, and everyone's like, who's got leverage? Everybody needs it to happen. And the guy involved who's being traded wants it to happen. And you don't want that guy around when he's unhappy. I mean, come on. It just makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, what's best for Jordan Love, right?
Oh, it's best for everybody. Yeah.
What's the best for Jordan Love? What's the best for Garrett Wilson? You know, if you want to start throwing names out there, like, what's best for everybody is that this gets done, you know? And so, I mean, from, you know, the guys at the highest level of each organization to the front offices, the scouts, knowing what they're doing, you know, going into the draft, having a better, clearer picture of that. You know, for the Jets, too, like, knowing what picks they won't have. You know what I mean? Like, that's helpful. You know, and then the coaches, of course, you know. For them, what's best is a deal getting done. So I think they're motivated. I think it was, you know, probably good for them to get to spend a few days together in Arizona at the owners' meetings this week. And, you know, I think I said the last time to you, Rich, like, you know, when the temperature was turned up, like with the McAfee thing and with what Aaron said on McAfee and all of that, I think I said to you at that point, I think cooler heads will prevail. Yeah. I think we're at the point where, you know, it looks like cooler heads are prevailing, and there's been good progress made.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. I appreciate that knowledge. Before I let you go, I need two tea leaf reads from you, okay? First one is read the tea and the leaves in the cup of the 49ers quarterback room. The comments made by John Lynch saying, well, Brock Purdy, I think, is in the lead position. And then, you know, the comments from Kyle Shanahan have been widely read as Sam Darnold's got a real shot to start. And what does this mean for Lance? Like, what is the current situation and thinking in that front office about their quarterback scenario?
Here's what I think is, so Trey Lance needs reps, okay?
Yep.
Like, Trey Lance needs to play. And, like, if you look at, like, the number of throws he's had since, you know, 2020, I mean, I guess since really, like, since
2019,
right?
Like, yeah, right.
2019 was his last, like, full season play. That number is so small. Here's the problem the Niners are facing. Like, last year was the year that they were going to sort of sacrifice to his development. Not sacrifice, but like, the feeling was at the beginning, in the summer, like, Jimmy is still the better quarterback, but we believe with reps, Trey will be the better quarterback by the time we get to December and January, and we'll be rolling into the playoffs with him, right?
Yep.
And, like, now I think this is the point where that team is such a win-now operation. You know what I mean? Like, you look at the way they're set up, and now they have this other young option in Brock Purdy. They can't afford to throw another season overboard in the name of, you know, a young quarterback's development, especially when they've got another good option on the roster. And so, you know, I think what they want to see from Trey Lance is, like, it's up to you. You know, you can make this difficult on us. You know, like, it's up to you. And we're not handing you anything this time around, you know, and it sucks because that's not your fault. You got hurt. Like, I think they still love him as a person. You know what I mean? You know, I think they still believe he could get there if they gave him like a full year to develop with reps and everything else. But I just think they're past the point where they're willing to make the sacrifice of saying, okay, like, we're going to, like, let all this happen in the name of his development, because they do have another option now, because they do have such a win now roster. So, you know, I think the injury sort of opens the door for both Trey Lance to develop and Sam Darnold to resuscitate his career. You know, both those guys are going to come in. I think the Niners are hoping that they have a very, very healthy competition between the two for reps in the spring and summer while Brock Purdy's getting healthy. And really, it's up to those two to make John Lynch or Kyle Shanahan change their mind. But as of right now, like I can tell you, like there's strong belief that Brock Purdy could be a really good starting quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, like it really is on both Lance and Darnold to move the Niners' brass off that spot.
Last tea leaf read from you, Albert. The pro day for Anthony Richardson just completed while we were conversing. He looked dynamite. This just in, no surprise. And the Panthers visited everybody's pro day and took three of the four prospects out to dinner. I don't know if the Raiders muscled in for dinner reservations before they could secure one with Anthony Richardson. If it doesn't matter, they had a meeting with him anyway. But the bottom line is the Raiders are the ones who took Richardson out to dinner. What to make of that? Anything?
Yeah. Not really. I mean, my understanding was some of the, because of the owners' meetings and all the stuff that comes along with it, a couple of the Panthers guys couldn't get in time last night to make like the big full on dinner with Anthony Richardson. I wouldn't make too much of it. I think that they're going to meet with him. I'm not 100% on this, but I think that their plan was to try to do something with him again tonight, spend a little more time with him with a more full group. And they're going to have these guys, you know, to Charlotte for 30 visits anyway. So they're going to get plenty of time with each of these guys. So I think this was more logistical around.
Sure. But what about the Raiders? But what about
also?
What about the Raiders fact of it? Yeah. What about the Raiders fact of it?
The Raiders just took the dinner slot.
No, no.
The Raiders met privately with Will Levis and CJ Stroud and Anthony and Bryce Young the night before those guys' pro days last year. It's just the Panthers had the dinner slot last week. So this week the Raiders have the dinner slot, because the Panthers logistically couldn't get all their guys there. I wouldn't read too much into it. Like, I think, like, the Raiders are in a similar spot to the Seahawks. The Seahawks have done all this work too. The Raiders and Seahawks, I think, are both in this spot where it's like we're comfortable with our guys, with Geno Smith and Jimmy Garoppolo, but we also don't plan to be drafting this high again for a while. And so while we're sitting here, if we may even be like right now planning not to take a quarterback at 5 or 7. But we at least need to have a full understanding of what we'd be passing on. And so, you know, I think it's smart for them to do all that work, because if one of those guys, you know, winds up blowing them away, or they get to the point where it's like, yeah, like we really think like we'd be in a good spot if we took Anthony Richardson, well, then what an awesome situation they would have. They'd have a starting quarterback for the next year or two, and they'd have the flexibility to be able to sit Richardson for a year or 2 years, which a lot of people think he needs, and, you know, have him ready to go as their starting quarterback in 2024 or 2025.
Right, exactly. But the question is, I guess, well, and then I'll let you go. 1 month from tonight is the draft. What's more likely? I'm going to use one of our staple segments here from our program. What's more likely, the Cardinals make the pick at 3, or one of the two teams you just mentioned trades up to go take Richardson if he's sitting there at 3?
I think neither of those things happen.
Uh-huh.
I think the Cardinals are going to trade the pick. I don't know if the Seahawks or Raiders will come up. I think the Cardinals are in a good spot to trade the pick. I think so much of this is on Levis and Richardson, though. Increasingly, I'm starting to feel like it's going to be Young and Stroud in one order or the other, 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts the Cardinals in a tremendous position on paper, because you would think like that, okay, like some team is going to try to hop the Colts, right? Because you see the Colts there at 4.
Yep.
You know, well, most people expect them to take a quarterback there. But what if no one's that in love with Levis or Richardson? You know, like that. So that I think is where things are. And so, and I don't know that Seattle or Vegas, like, I think, like, you know, like they could take a quarterback if one falls to them. I don't know that they would get aggressive and move up. I think that sort of still remains to be seen.
Albert, you're the man. Let's chat again real soon. Greatly appreciate it. Loved seeing you lurking at the owners' meeting. I appreciate you lurking here. Appreciate it.
And I'll try to live up. I'll try to reach that Darlington standard next time around.
Yeah, right? You're good. You're good. You're already aces in our book, as you know. Thanks for the call, Albert. You're the man. You be well.
All right. Thanks, Rich.
That's Albert Breer. Follow him. A must follow on Twitter. Must. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay. Lots to unpack there. We're going to unpack what he just said about Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, and also news from New York. Hashtag all rise.
All rise indeed.
Oh, baby. And my top five list is a dynamite one. Top five NFL players that should wear number zero. That's coming up next right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, terrestrial radio network, coast to coast it is. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger is the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Just went in the back. Our third hour guest, Brendan Hunt, who plays Coach Beard in the brilliant show Ted Lasso. He is already here. He came wearing, he wasn't wearing it at the time, it's in the corner, I don't know if he's going to wear it out here, a Montreal Expos baseball cap for opening day, which is next level.
Fantastic.
Remember the time where I believe Tommy Lasorda once had Yuppie, their mascot, ejected? I think.
I don't remember that, yeah. But that's funny.
Odd that that's my only Montreal, my first Montreal Expos memory. My other one was when I called a game for ESPN2. In San Diego between the Padres and the Expos.
The deuce, Rich.
Uh-huh. And it was the backup game, so literally nobody was watching it. It went nine innings scoreless. Oh, my God.
Was that a Pedro game back then?
Say it again?
Was that a Pedro game back then?
No. I don't remember.
What year was that?
I don't recall either. Off the top of my head, Ryan Klesko hit a walk-off hit for the Expos to win that game.
Wow.
1-0 in 10. Right? Holy crap. You want to talk about trying to fill time? Oh, my gosh.
The old stadium.
I'm going to find this game for you.
In the old Jack Murphy Stadium? Jack Murphy Stadium. Or Qualcomm, which I do believe Matt Harvey paid fealty once on Dan Patrick's show, quite famously.
Hey, now.
844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the program. So, Albert Breer just said that he thinks things between the Jets and the Packers are in a much better spot than people are talking about, and that the deal, he thinks it can get done not only before the draft, but maybe this week.
This week?
Did you hear what he said?
I mean, I did.
I heard it too.
I mean, I don't know.
This week.
I don't know.
Everyone likes each other. Joe Douglas and Gutekunst used to be scouts on the road together.
Sure.
They probably checked into, you know, the room, the red roof next door to each other once upon a time in the middle of, you know, SEC country, right?
The money made it.
Okay. Like Mooch and Andy Reid.
They left the light on for each other. And LaFleur and Salah, quite literally best friends. LaFleur? They like each other. They like each other. Woody and Mark Murphy, they've done this before. They've traded. They swapped draft choices for generationally brilliant and talented Green Bay Packer quarterbacks at the end of their Hall of Fame run. They've done this before. This is not their first such rodeo. It's better than you think. And then in the middle of all that, as if the good news for me is not enough, you get in my ear and you say to me,
all right,
Aaron Judge hits his first home run of the season in his first at-bat, picking up where he left off. We're forgetting about the playoffs, but picking up where we left off.
Just a bomb
to center field.
And that's caused me. I truly thought this during the moment. You heard what the first thing I asked Mike Hoskins as soon as we hit the break. Yeah. I thought of your what's more likely supposition from last Friday.
It was good.
What's going to happen first? Judge hits its 10th home run of the season,
no.
Or Rodgers puts on a Jets jersey. We got a horse race, people. Who's going to be the first to the finish line?
All right.
This week, Aaron Judge has already got 9 more to go.
That's good.
And 3 more at-bats likely today. He hits another one. Judge is going to be making a case. Oh, what a great bright! It stopped raining. What else do I need? Should I play the numbers? Should I play the? Is there a Powerball tonight? There is.
Tomorrow.
Let's go.
Lottery tomorrow.
Good enough. I'm feeling good. How about that? Wow. Could Rogers be a Jet by the end of the week?
Well, we've got a month till the Derby.
Thank you, Mike.
Derby in a month, Mike.
That's for you in the horse race.
It makes sense, man. The Packers are going to have to. Why would the Packers pass up on using draft choices now? Why would they do that? Just to stand firm in a position that nobody in their fan base is demanding they stand firm on? I shouldn't say nobody. There are some who push back at me every single moment. They're like, he should stick around for a first-round pick. They're not going to get it. All right? It ain't happening. I got a top 5 list. You ready for it?
Oh, let's
always
go. Come on, TJ.
Always.
Top 5.
Oh, yes. As you may have heard, the NFL owners approved the number 0 to be used by NFL players for the first time in forever.
Cannot wait.
So
somewhere Jim Otto was smiling,
Lurie,
right?
Jeff Lurie of the Eagles said they're running out of numbers. That's part of the reason why.
They're running out of numbers?
Yeah.
There's 53 people on a team.
I get it, but numbers are being retired and things like that.
Good point.
They needed 0 as an option.
Had to have it.
Now, as you know,
it's double 0.
As you know, players love their jerseys numbers. They've had it since childhood. They're wearing their college number.
Like Stevie Wonder, they're very superstitious.
Very superstitious.
I heard
in my book in 2007 that not enough people bought. Total Access. I have a whole section on players' superstitions. It's a great segment.
I had the book and I knew that. Yes.
So people are very superstitious about their numbers. But I think some might be willing to change. And there's other scenarios to make this top 5 list of the top 5 players that should wear number 0. Let's get started. This one is the first one I thought of as soon as I heard this being passed. Wherever he goes, wherever he's drafted, Darnell Washington of Georgia will get to keep it.
Good one.
We already see it. Yep. We've seen it. He rocks it very well.
People have been rocked
by him wearing it. Wherever this kid gets drafted 1 month, maybe from tonight, he could be a first-round talent. This is a no-brainer. He's worn it in college. He gets to keep it in the pros. No doubt in my mind, if he is drafted first round, you know, they always have the number 1 on the jersey that they hold up for them. They should have 0.
Just have it ready.
At the draft 1 month from tonight with his name on it. Darnell Washington of Georgia's number 5 on the list. Number 4. Now, he's coming in next week. I get to ask him this point blank. He's at the end of his career. I'm sure he's very attached to his number. But I think it would be perfect for Jason Kelce to be the first Philadelphia Eagle to wear number 0. Because also at this point of his career, number 0 as the center of the Philadelphia Eagles, it would also stand for the exact number of Fs he has left to give.
Yeah, that's true.
In his career, he's playing for the love of the game. He's playing for the love of the teammates. And he's playing for, you know, that ring. He's already got 1.
Well, the check doesn't hurt either.
He's got a lot of 0s on that. So Jason Kelce should be the first 0 in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles. Number 3 on this list, he just, you know, he wore 46 in college. He wears 85 now. I don't know if he's attached to this. Well, why shouldn't George Kittle be the first 0 in the history of the San Francisco 49ers? I kind of like it. First tight end of TE, tight end university, Rocket 0. I know that I already named Darnell Washington as 0. I just think Kittle as a 0 would be a lot of fun.
I could see it.
You know, and I think if there's anybody that could break the stigma of I'm wearing zero, that you're not nothing, you're something, it's George Kittle. It would also stand for the number of bad days that he has. Zero.
Kiwa on a beach.
Bad days. Yeah. So there you go. That's George Kittle. Number two on the list, he's the one who put it in the ether, and as soon as I heard it, it's perfect. Micah Parsons, you got to go through with your plan to be Agent Zero.
Do it.
Call yourself Agent Zero.
Do it.
He tweeted it out himself yesterday. Micah Parsons as the first zero in the history of the Dallas Cowboys, right? I don't think anybody's ever worn zero there. So Micah Parsons said Agent Zero. He even branded himself that. You could make a t-shirt line. You could put him on mugs. You could do all of that stuff. Agent Zero sounds terrific. And number one, you can't spell his first name without the letter that stands for the number. Odell Beckham Jr. Where he signs should be zero. Zero Dell Beckham Jr. Odell Beckham Jr. Are you picking up what I'm putting down?
Good call.
Plus, Alan Lazard also has number 13 on the Jets. And Don Maynard wore 13 on the Jets. You don't need to do that. Number three, forget it. Zero. Good in one. Green or zero in white. Odell Beckham Jr. It's perfect. That's my top five players that should wear number zero.
You think we need one more? All right, we'll get one more.
Okay. Now, this all, when you switch to zero, you got to have a narrative around it, okay? Yep. Now, anybody that gets passed in the first round should wear it. In the same way that once upon a time, if you know, Maurice Jones-Drew wore 32 because those were the number of teams that passed him in the first round. You can wear zero now and say, these are the number of teams that took me in the first round and wear that as your badge of honor. So that's another one to put out there. And maybe if he does come back for year 10 in his life, maybe Will Compton should wear number one. And since I already used the phrase no bad days, the guy who actually was the no bad days guy is Taylor Lewan. However, if both go back in the league, they should wear zero because zero is the exact number of motors that's in the bus. Change the 8 on the side of the bus for bussing with the boys to zero for the number of motors underneath the hood.
That's what's happening.
It's perfect branding. Zero for Compton, zero for Lewan, and I promise everybody, the zero will not wind up standing for number of in-person appearances I make on Bussin' with the Boys. And certainly in order to ensure that, putting zero on the side of the bus to stand for the number of motors underneath the hood is what we call chef's kiss. And that's my list.
Good list.
You like the list?
I do. Odell is a no-brainer. Odell's a no-brainer.
Odell Beckham Jr. Yeah,
no-brainer.
His name starts with an O. The letter O is on his jersey.
It's a no-brainer.
Don't you think? Wherever he goes?
Are we going to see a quarterback ever wear zero?
I can't imagine.
Probably not, right?
I mean, I would flip it, right? Instead of the number of teams that passed on me, if I was the number one pick, I'd wear zero for the number of teams that passed on me. Like, none of them passed on me. That was the first pick.
Pick. I'm zero.
Nobody passed on me.
Nobody passed on
me. So Anthony Richardson wears zero.
In TJ's mock draft,
Speaking of mock drafts, I have one for you.
Crossed
my Twitter feed last night. Let's take a break. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. You don't want to miss this. That's coming up right here on this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, talking about our new addition in the back.
By the way, Rich, I'm going to be very honest with you. You can taste the difference in this new Keurig, man. Right. That old one was Methuselah type old.
We had 8 years without cleaning it, so.
That's true, too.
We figured.
Yeah, nobody's doing that.
I mean, God knows what's
all right. The first what we do is 8 years of not cleaning something, and then we'll get a new one.
Yeah.
Saves you from actually cleaning device.
I mean, the first sip
sounds like
of
a
the
great
new one,
plan, guys.
It had me like.
This plus, plan. I bought a nice couple of nice dip coffees to see what we like. Mm-hmm. I got to get my Dunkin' though.
Okay.
All right, Rich. Problem with your list. Someone just tweeted us.
Yes.
Everyone is allowed to wear the number zero except offensive and defensive linemen.
Yeah, I was just about to bring that up.
Well, these are people who should wear it. I don't care what the rules are. You know what? Just like the movie Air, I'll pay their fine.
Great.
Okay.
Wait, who paid the fine in Air? Well, never mind. I'll see.
I don't care. I don't care about rules. Monster.com is there to help you win your job hunt. Monster.com is there for you to put your resume on. And once you actually upload your resume to Monster.com, watch it all work. The it being employers who are already on the site, potentially already recruiting you before you even get to see their job posted. They're looking at you first. Then they post their jobs or in any other order. You never know. So why not post your resume to Monster.com right now? Because they specialize in building the right teams for employers and then know how to match you with those job fits. When you score the position, there's a salary calculator ensuring you're paid what you're worth. You also get career advice, great coaching. There's millions of job openings. So there's no reason, if you're looking for a job, to not post your resume to Monster.com. You have all the reason, in other words, to go there. Go to Monster.com and win your job hunt today. Monster.com. Hey, folks. I was out there on my Twitter feed last night seeing what's going on and also staring at my blue check mark for the last 2 days that I have it, because there's no way on planet Earth I will ever give that man who runs the site a dime of my money for a status symbol. My name is at Rich Eisen. Anybody else is not the real thing. I don't need a blue check mark. I've got a blue zip-up sweater that I think is very, very nice.
You got a million followers plus. So
yeah, it's all right.
You know what I mean?
It's all
like, right. You're legit.
I don't mean to go down that wormhole.
We need it.
On that hellscape of a site, there's still some very nice people and some very nice requests and some very nice moments that can come out of being on Twitter. I saw a tweet last night from a woman saying, Laura Smith, at mom four, number four Steelers. I'm imagining she's a mom who likes the Steelers. My 13-year-old would love to hear any opinion on his draft choices, especially yours at Bucky Brooks and at Adam Rank. She personally would like to hear from Adam Schefter, and she added me. We'd love to hear from anyone in at Steelers Nation. Well, I can't, Steeler Nation, I can't speak for the rest, but I can speak for me. I saw this mock draft. Her son's name apparently is Aaron. Aaron, I saw your mock draft. Now, mock drafts are difficult. They really are, because you have no idea if there are trades, and then you have to kind of hew a bit to what you're hearing out there so they sound, you know, it comes across as realistic. Mm-hmm. You can take your shots here and there and when you're guessing, but if you do crazy stuff like, you know, a wide receiver in the top five of a draft where there's five spots and many of them need quarterbacks, four of them do, and there's four quarterbacks, it makes a mock draft, you'd throw it away. But I saw this mock draft, and I got to tell you, Aaron, I like it. I like it a lot.
I like it a lot.
And we actually put together a mock draft, NFL mock draft 6.0. Wow. Aaron, I like it so much, we're giving you a graphic.
Yeah.
He thinks that it's Stroud first, and I kind of believe that's the case. And then it's Bryce Young. Of course, if Arizona trades out, Will Anderson won't be third. But if they stay there and they don't get what they want for the third overall pick from anybody else, I kind of think it's going to be Will Anderson. And then if that happens, I do think Anthony Richardson becomes a Colt. Tyree Wilson, by the way, is an edge rusher that is atop so many draft boards. We didn't talk about him at the combine because we didn't see him at the combine. And he's there. I think the Seahawks would take him. Jalen Carter is the big question mark. But I am seeing Jalen Carter go to the Lions on a lot of mock drafts, so I like your pick there. I do think Will Levis lands at 7 if this all works out. Lucas Van Ness is a terrific edge rusher, and I'll tell you what. If this Northwestern kid, Skoronski,
he was my pick for the Bears,
falls
too.
To the Bears at 9, they will run that card up to Roger Goodell. Run it. And Devin Witherspoon is a corner in Philly. Nice choice.
Skoronski seems nice ready choice. Made I mean, for Bears, right?
I mean, a defensive back right there. I like your top tenner.
Yeah.
I think that's a we're going to hold on to that to see how.
13?
The Jets?
No. Aaron.
Yeah. Yes.
Aaron's 13.
By the way, Aaron's 13. Aaron's 13. So are the Jets.
Okay.
Because they're not trading that pick. Here we go. He thinks Broderick Jones, who is our first guest tomorrow, goes to the Jets. And that's why the Jets aren't trading the pick. They can get this monster from Georgia to pass protect.
With Beck?
Tennessee getting. I don't particularly like an Ohio State guy filling Lawan's shoes, but I get it. He's pretty damn good. Miles Murphy's a good choice. These are all. By the way, could you imagine if Joey Porter winds up with the Steelers?
Oh, that'd be amazing, right?
The full yeah, another circle Porter. Right
there. That would be amazing.
I kind of dig all of these picks. None of them made me think, get out of here. Michael Mayer, the tight end from Notre Dame going to Green Bay when they just lost Tonyan. You could sit here and go tight end, top 15. Daniel Jeremiah loves this tight end group. He said there would be multiple first-round picks from the tight end group. Do you want to finish it up? Here's the back end. Jackson Smith and Jigba coming here to Los Angeles would be great. Quentin Johnston, you know the Ravens need a first-round draft choice. Hendon Hooker at wide receiver. You know Hendon Hooker could wind up in Minnesota. That is a fascinating choice. I'm hearing a lot about how the Vikings love the quarterback class and would use their first-round draft choice on this kid. You get a fifth year of control. I know he's not going to be out there for this year, but you don't need him this year. Zay Flowers in New York, Bijan Robinson for the Cowboys. Nolan Smith still being around on 29 would be for the Saints a Christmas lift type gift. I love the Aaron Smith, sir. Well done.
Good job, Aaron.
I like his mock draft a lot. So, good thanks job, at Mom for Steelers for putting that on my timeline. Brendan Hunt coming up.
And you skipped over my favorite name from that second 10, Osiris Torrance.
Yeah, he's working out at his pro day today. You're already seeing it's lighting up a Twitter feed about how he looks as well.
I just love his name, man.
He also went second round.
Oh, hey now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Aaron ain't no joke.
Jordan Addison won't have much long to wait if he does wait all the first night and not get picked, our first hour guest. He's got him going to the Steelers, Jalin Hyatt to the Texans. That would be a run on those positions at the top. Look at him going deep, man, into the second round of these picks. Well done. A lot of fun. Awesome. Bills taking Zach Charbonnet is a nice pick.
Sounds like a wine.
Well, I know. He was at Michigan, and then he came here to UCLA. He's a kid from, I believe he's a Zeno Oaks Christian kid. I think he might be.
Jordan Addison going back to the Steelers.
He's from Southern California. And Darnell Washington to the Bengals. Oh, baby.
Wow.
Fun names, fun list.
Good job, brother.
And the neat thing is it came my way through that disastrous cesspool. Known as Twitter.
Every now and then, Rich.
Currently. Every now and then. It's still there. There's still bright light shining through. It's still alive. By the way, my blue check mark's still alive. It's about to take many shots.
I heard Twitter was worth half of what it was when it got bought.
Don't even get
That's what happens when you kick two Jiggy off your platform.
True story.
It drops.
We got to get you back on it. We got to get you back.